want to speak tonight about a common question that involves a principle in the Mishnah, which is not always clearly understood. You go shopping, you take your kid into the supermarket, he knocks a jar off the shelf, or you're visiting someone's house, and he eats the draperies or something. What's the halacha? Do the parents have any liability for what their kids have done? So the Mishnah says, Cherisha tevekatan piyasan ra. We're interested here primarily in katan piyasan ra. Heim shechav l'bacherim p'turim. If they damage anyone else, kabbalah means injury. Similar halacha applies to property damage too. If they cause damage to someone else, then the victim is, sorry, out of luck. He cannot collect. The Mishnah says the same thing about Isha. Ha'evad v'isha piyasan ra. Again, heim shechav l'bacherim p'turim. If a woman, a married woman, damages property of someone else, again, the victim is out of luck. He can't collect because the married woman, all her property is meshuba to her husband. And now the Mishnah continues, avo meshalmin l'achar zman. But the woman and the eved, they will have to pay eventually. What does that mean eventually? The Mishnah goes on, is garsha ha'isha neshtachar ha'eved. The woman becomes divorced or widowed, and now she has control of her own property. Then the debt remains in force, the liability remains, and she's obligated to compensate her victim. Now the Mishnah is notably silent on the question of katan. The Gemara does not say that a katan is chayiv to pay la'achar zman. The Mishnah does not imply that there is any point at which the katan will have to pay. The implication of the Mishnah, as noted by the poskim, is that a katan never has to pay. If a katan commits an act of hezek, a tort, while he is a minor, he will never have to pay even after he grows up. That is the consensus of most, virtually all poskim. For example, the Rush on this Mishnah points this out. He says that there's a difference. The Mishnah has two different groupings. Later, Acharonim follow this. The Mishnah has two different groupings. A married woman, in principle, does have an obligation, just she doesn't have assets. Her assets are under the control of her husband. But since in Lamdus she does have a chiyuv, she will eventually have to pay. While a katan, in principle, because he's not a bardas, he has no liability. So he never has to pay. That's the opinion of the Rush. That's the opinion of the Rambam. Rambam says this very explicitly, twice in Hilchos Geneva, again in Hilchos Chov Lamazik. The Rambam says, katan shaganav is potter. V'mavdo enachayev l'shalem, afa karen, afilu l'acha shehigdol. Explicitly, he doesn't have to pay even after he grows up. Says the same thing in Hilchos Chaval. And that's how almost all poskim rule, that a katan has no liability ever, even after he grows up, and the victim is completely out of luck, unlike the woman who the obligation is in place, and if she ever has assets that are hers completely, she will have to pay her victim. The one exception is an arzarua. The arzarua, which is brought in the Hagos Ashri, most poskim saw it there, we have the arzarua itself. Arzarua says that a katan who commits a tort is obligated to pay when he grows up. He brings a couple of rayas. One of them is a Gemara in Bava Kamma later, next parak. Gemara brings a fairly obscure little incident. The Gemara is discussing certain technical questions about Grumma and Garmi, about Hezek. And in the context of the discussion on Dafsadi Vav, Dafsadi Zayin, Dafsadi Ches, the Gemara says, Gemara brings an incident very tersely. The Gemara is talking about burning a shtar. If Reuven burned Shimon's document and thereby caused Shimon a hezek, that document was irreplaceable. He doesn't have a copy. He's going to lose whatever rights were certified by that document. So there's a chiyuv of garmi. You have to pay. It's called sarif shtaro. The Gemara brings such an incident. There was such a case where someone burned someone else's document. So the Gemara says hava uvda, where Rav Ashi burned someone else's document. V'kafrei rafram l'Rav Ashi. Rafram, the Dayan, forced Rav Ashi, kafye, he compelled him to pay. He made Rav Ashi pay. Now Rashi, on this Gemara, Rashi says, what did Rav Ashi do here exactly? He burned someone's document. What was going on here? So Rashi says, Sarif Chavero Bialduso. Rav Ashi had committed this incident of damage when he was young. Virtually all of them, the Farshim, understand that Rashi's point, why is Rashi telling you that Rav Ashi was a young man when this happened? He means Rav Ashi, as a mature, distinguished Amara, Talmud Chacham, did not go around causing malicious, wanton damage to people's property. The answer is he was young. Even Rav Ashi was once a child. Even Rav Ashi was once young. And this happened before he was Rav Ashi, when he was still young.
What does he have to pay for? The paper? What is it?
So that's a sig over there. It's beyond the scope of our discussion, but he has to pay the value of the loss he causes to the holder of the document. If the document, for example, was a note, an IOU, and the IOU will be uncollectible without the document, he has to pay the value of the loan. So if the face value was, say, $1,000, and it matures in 10 years, and there's a, and it was a grade AA bond, you have to ask the bond market how much this bond is worth now. And assuming it was foot, and then you, then now it's uncollectible because there's no note, and then you, that's what you pay. But you know, the for our purposes, the point is you have to pay, period, regardless of that. It's certainly more than the paper. You have to pay the value of the lost asset that the bond represented.
That's B.L. Dusso. Isn't the El Dusso and Katnuso different?
We'll get to that. We'll get to that. So the Arzurua, and some posts will follow him, a very small minority view, the Arzurua therefore infers that he understands that El Dusso and Katnuso are the same. He therefore says, we see that even though the hezek occurred while he was a katan, he was still forced to pay by Raphram when he was a gadol later. And you see, therefore, that in our Mishnah, that a katan too, piyasin ra, just means while he's a katan, he cannot be made to pay. But he too, just like a woman, will have to pay when he grows up. And as I said, this is very much a das yachid. This is rejected by all the poskim. All the poskim say that no, a katan never has to pay even when he grows up. So what do they do with this story? So one approach is the approach suggested by Dr. Mann. They say, when Rashi says, B'al Duso, as you mentioned earlier, Rashi wasn't getting involved directly in this question of whether a katan has to pay. Rashi just meant, how could it be that Ravashi, the distinguished sage Ravashi, would have done such a thing? And the answer was, it's B'al Duso. So he says, he was young. He was above bar mitzvah, but he was young. He was... So, you know, I guess it's a chiddush, Arvash, even when he was a teenager, was still a little bit of a cowboy, but that's what some acharonim suggest. That Rashi means he was young, he wasn't fully mature yet, but he was over bar mitzvah. Some say we just don't pass him like Rashi, that Rashi doesn't, the Rashi does agree to the Arzurua, that the Hakatan can be made to pay when he grows up. And the halacha is not like Rav Ashi.
To the extent that he has to pay the damages, then it must be known what the document said.
Yes, that's a good point. That's true even by a gadol. If he denies that the document said, if he claims the document said half as much, if he claims it was a shopping list rather than a document, if it can't be proven that is definitely true, then if he denies it, again, the cardinal principle in Chasam Mishpat always is, lo ivru sadi el l'shakri. If people are honest and tell the truth, then we don't need it. If there's some dispute, if they don't remember, if nobody knows what it said, or if they argue about what it said, if he says, I saw 500, he says, no, you missed a zero, it was 5,000, then you're right. The burden of proof, of course, and we know is always on the plaintiff, unless it's an varaya. So if there's no agreement, or even if he just says, I don't remember, it happens years later, and we don't have records, and nobody remembers, you're right. Though that certainly is an important point. What we're discussing here in principle, assuming there is no dispute, assuming he takes his word for it, assuming he admits that he saw the shtar, assuming we know what the shtar said, then...
So to that extent, why couldn't he collect it from the person that he had the
oath? So that would depend. So for example, if there were two valid witnesses, third-party witnesses who remembered what the shtar said, then you're probably right, they could collect. Even then, there would be certain questions if it wouldn't have been a shtar, if it was a milval peh. Milval peh has certain, it's not as good, but you're right, that is a good point. What I was alluding to was, let's say the mazik himself, or Vashi in the story, he saw what it said, but he's only one aide, he might not be Neman, he might have been related to the Malvin Love, but there could be other reasons why his personal recollection or concession in Basin might not be worth anything, but it would still be enough to obligate him to pay. But yes, that is a good point. If there happened to be two aides and the Chov is still collectible, the Chov has not been damaged, and you're right, then the whole question would be moot and the wooden. In certain cases, you can even draw up a new shtar. If there are aides who remember what the shtar said, there is a process by which they can formally testify in Basin, and Basin will authorize the redrafting the document. Yes, that is a very good point.
You can derive anybody from something like this, it could be this because he was a gadol or something like that. It can't be derived from a maisa like this, not necessarily.
It's true. The maisa is only literally one line of the Gemara, and the Gemara doesn't say the word gadlus. So, and I myself would probably be reluctant to bring this raya, but you know, what can we do? The Rishonim already brought this raya. The Arzurua was from the great. You know, so you're right. It is hard to build too much of a castle on this one little line, and most of them do reject it for a number of different reasons. But that it boils down to what you're saying. This is a very thin reed to build a major doctrine on. I don't disagree.
Does anybody say Lifnim Moshur Sadin?
That's an excellent point. So that brings us to the last part of what I want to discuss: the idea of Lifnim Moshur Sadin. There's a Trumas Hadeshin. The Trumas Hadeshin was asked about a child who had behaved badly while he was a child. cursed his father when he was 11. He did some other Avera. He gave false testimony. I'm not sure how he could give testimony at all if he was Katan. But he did these things, and he wanted to do tshuva. And now that he was a gadol, and the question was, what should he do? Does he have any responsibility for various Averas that he did when he was a katan? I don't know how you define an Avera. I'm sure most of us probably did all kinds of things when we were young that we regret doing now that we're older. And I'm not sure how much you have to do tshuva for. If you got into a fight with your friend in fourth grade, and if you said Lashon Hara in third grade, and if you stole the snack in fifth grade, I don't know how far back you have to go exactly, but in any event, this was the Shailah for Tshuva Sedeshin. Someone had done Averis when he was a Katan. He wanted to know if he had to do tshuva when he was a Gadol. So the Tshuva Sedeshin says that even Averis involve compensation, Hezek, we're not actually mechayev to pay, as you would a Gadol, dollar for dollar, a fully assessed value of the damage. We do, however, say that you do need some kind of kapara. It is a black mark on your record in some sense. He's not clear exactly what he means. His language is kind of vague. He says, "His daik tamuda bekama duchtin." The Gemara in many places implies simin rahu lekatan shenasim uchshelas mitachas yado. It's a bad sign, a bad omen for a child, if averis were done via him. So he should undertake some kind of kapara. Again, not dollar for dollar, but he should do something to undertake some kind of kapara. This is brought by the Raman Shulchan Aruch, not in Chasam Mishpat, in Hilcha Shabbos actually. Hilcha Shabbos, Simon Shin Mem Gimel, that is actually the Simon in Shulchan Aruch on Chinuch. Comes up in the middle of Hilcha Shabbos where the various dinim of Chinuch, of being Mafresh Akatim from Isser, and the various the ages of Chinuch, it's all there in one short Simon in Arachayim. So there, the Ramah brings his Trumas Hadeshin that if a child did Averis, even though he's not formally responsible in a regular Chasam Mishpat sense when he grows up, or in any other sense of a full Avera, but he should undertake some kind of Kapara. And one of the Trumas Hadeshin's Rayas seems to be from this Gemara of Raphram. The Trumas Hadeshin says that Mikra Din, he doesn't really have any Avera. But he says there is he calls it a bahag. Bahag is, nobody knows what he means. They say it may have been toasted first. It should refer to Hagos Hashri, which is our Zerua. He says the bahag says that he's chayav l'shalim. And doesn't say exactly what he means, but some say that the makar is from this Gemara of Raphram and Ravashi. That the Gemara says that Raphram made Ravashi pay when he grew up. So we've seen up till now, some learned, our Zeruah learned, that means Mikra Din, the Katan Hezekiah when he grows up. Others learned, Rashi said to be able to do so, he meant he was a teenager. He was above our mitzvah, but he was just young and immature. The Trumas Hadeshin seems to have a third shot. Trumas Hadeshin seems to learn that the Gemara does mean literally a Katan, below 13, and we don't mean, and we do pass it like it, not like the other Acharon would say we don't pass it like it, we do pass it like this. Nevertheless, we don't mean a Chasam Mishpat kind of chiyuv of dollar for dollar, tashlumei hezek, like we learn all over Chasam Mishpat, all over Bava Kama. We mean some kind of din of tshuva that expunged the black mark on your record of the heavenly ledger. You really should do some kind of tshuva, but it doesn't mean a rigid kind of tashlumin, dollar for dollar. This is basically how the Taz makes this point explicitly. One of the last things we covered in the end of last man, we discussed the Fimishur Sadin. We learned the celebrated Gemara in the end of Perek HaPolim Bav Metzia, the Gemara about the barrels, where the workers of Rav Bar Chana smashed some barrels negligently, and he wanted to charge them for the barrels, and the Dayan said, no, don't charge them. He said, Dina Hach, is that the din? The din is a chayim. He said, yeah, it's a din for you, Laman Telech Baderech Tovim. You shall walk in the path of the good. Then they said, we want our salary too, because we're hungry, we have no food. He said, pay them the salary. He said, Dinach, is that really the din? He said, yes, Varacha Tzadikim Tishmar, you really should be going L'fim Ashur Sadin, or something like that. Some meaning of L'fim Ashur Sadin. So the Taz says that's what was going on here with Raphim and Ravashi too. The Taz says that what the Gemara means is that, it says, Kafye, Raphim had to force Ravashi. Ravashi didn't want to do things that he's chayav to Alpi Din. It was bad enough that he broke this, that he burned the shtar in the first place. Now he was thumbing his nose at justice and was refusing to make good on what he did if he's chayev. He says, no, he says, I mean, he was not chayev. He's, as you were saying, L'fim Ashur Sadin, he was not chayev Mikra Din. And he held on Pater, so I'm not going to pay. The Dayan told him, no, L'fim Ashur Sadin, you really should be paying. So that's the idea of this Trumas Hadeshin, either as a kind of kapara or as L'fim Ashur Sadin. We find a similar thing about Achronim bringing the Sefer Chassidim. He also talks about a case of children who did Averis, or Averis that had financial repercussions. And he also says, Mikra Din, there isn't a real Chiyuv. Bamid Chasidus, the Lifnei Mishur Sadin, there's a Shvus Yaakov who actually breaks into two levels. He says, Shemayim, you should pay something. Midas Chasidus, you should pay the entire amount. He doesn't define clearly what Lassus De Shemayim versus Midas Chasidus means, but in general, we find the idea of Lassus De Shemayim, of satisfying your obligation to heaven, is a very high level of obligation. It means Beis Din can't make you do it, but you really are obligated to do it, just Beis Din has no jurisdiction. So that you can satisfy by paying something. Midas Chasidus, if you want to do extra credit, if you want to do the right thing, Chasidus, then you really should pay everything. That's an idea proposed by the Shvus Yaakov.
Rabbi Grossman, you said kafia, they were kofa him. You can't be kofa somebody to do it.
That's a good point. We discussed that last man too. We discussed that there are actually different opinions on whether you can be kofa, whether you can use real force to compel somebody to do Timishur Sadin. There are actually opinions that you can. The consensus of the poskim indeed is that you cannot use real force, but that is indeed what the Taz says. The Taz says exactly what you said. He said, El Bidvarim Achbe. He means he compelled him verbally, he gave him a tongue lashing, he used moral suasion to get him to do what he felt he should do, and he brings other Gemaras. He says that sometimes Kfiya means simply verbally without using actual force. Just want to close with one last point, one other approach to this question. There's a tshuva from Nesefer Nachlas Elio about 75 years ago. He discusses a case of a kid who brought a child into a home and the child destroyed things. And he wants to say Yerchayev, even up Yas and Ra, he brings an idea called Maimon. The halacha is, if I take my animal and I let it graze in your field, I position it, I move it into your field, I'm Chayev. Besides the din of Behema Hamazeka, Shein Varegel, besides all that, there's a new din called Mazik. If I put the animal there, I'm Chayev, because I put it there. So it's as if it's a special din, it's as if I was Mazik via the Behema. Even though the Behema is a semi-autonomous entity, it eats on its own, since I placed it there, I'm Chayev. So this Rav Dushnitzer, I think his name is, in his Sefer Nachlas Elio, proposes the same thing. If I bring a child into the house, and the child is Mazik, I'm Chayev, because I brought him there. But he says that's only if it's Bari Hezek, only if the Hezek is certain or near certain. So you put a child on a table full of china, I think that's kind of his example. He's gonna a bull in a china shop, a kid on a table full of china, he's going to knock things off. That doesn't mean necessarily if I brought a kid into a store and the kid happened to get a little wild and knock a jar off a shelf. Most kids, I don't think that would be called Bari Hezeka. So, at least in the case of Bari Hezeka, he has a new approach to Mechayev, Midin Maimed. There is one other approach of Rav Shlomo Miller I once heard, that if the kid takes toilet paper and tosses it in the toilet, you can be held Chayev for that if you brought the kid into the house. He had another approach, not Maimed, an approach called Bar HaMizgalgel, Dlil HaMizgalgel, Baragle Tarnagel. That's beyond the scope of our talk, maybe another time.